Men, do you want to look and feel good? Let Cimarroni Couture fit you with the finest fabrics and the best fitting custom shirts, pants, sport coats, and suits. We will come to your home or office, or if you want, you can come to us. We look forward to being of service to you. Call Missy, our CEO, at 216-496-2592. That's Cimarroni Couture, 216-496-2592.
Hey, this is Coach Cimarroni, Blood Time Podcast, and I got a fantastic guest on the phone from, I believe, the wonderful state of Missouri, the show me state. Nick Perler, how you doing, Nick?
Doing fantastic. Thank you guys for having me.
Nick, are you what part of Missouri are you guys in?
I'm just from outside of St. Louis. I live about 30 miles north of St. Louis, and we have a gym up here as well. So my brother Tony is in the Kansas City area. So we're both, probably 25, 30 miles from the Illinois border. He's probably 15, 20 miles from the Kansas border. So
I love it.
Kind of on opposite ends of the state. But I'm in the same.
I love it. I love it. Well, you guys are pure Midwesterners. We love it, and we love the Midwestern ethic. And you went to a fabulous university, but you had a pretty storied career in high school in Missouri. I think you were, a 3 or 4 time state champ. I think you only lost a couple matches in your entire career. And then you go over to Oklahoma State with another superstar from our state, Alan Freed, back in the days when the Cowboys were kicking butt.
Yeah, that was, I graduated high school in 88, took a year off to gray shirt, which is not very popular nowadays, but I was a little small for college wrestling. I have an identical twin brother, and it just looking at the projections as far as the lineup over the next 4 to 6 years, our coach back then, Joe C., like, why don't you gray shirt? Tony will be a red shirt, and then, we'll slide back in. And that was sort of the plan. It worked out pretty well, except for that I got a little bit too big. So making 118 was, it was kind of a miserable for me.
Sure.
It was just, but you really don't know. Sometimes we grow more out of high school a bit.
Yeah.
So, Oklahoma State, so was my brother. And my first year of college officially was 89-90, and my brother was 88-89. So he's a year ahead of me, even though we're identical twins. And then Alan Freed came in a year after.
Yeah.
I officially did, which was 88. So I think he graduated in 89, and we were ended up being roommates. But he's a good dude, and we had some hammers there at Oklahoma State. It was a great experience.
No doubt. Yeah, 94 is when he won his title. And I think were you guys national champs then, the team?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we won in 89, 90, and 94. So I was on campus 6 years, and we won it 3 times. And wow. I was on the team, technically 5 years with a red shirt. Won it twice. You're around, Randy Couture was on the team, Corey Bays, Kendall Cross.
Yep.
Chris Barnes was undefeated for a couple years, not even taken down.
Wow.
There were a lot of hammers. Pat Smith obviously was on the team. Jacob Newby. We had some great wrestlers. My brother, obviously. So that's just a handful of the guys. Mike Farrell was in All-American about 4 times. Kirk Mammon, 4-time All-American. So, like I said, Randy Couture, twice All-American. Think finalist twice. So
Yep.
That 5 or 6 year time frame, you're just around a lot of killers. The coaches were killers. The athletic director was Dave Martin. He was an Iowa State NCAA champ. He was roommates with Dan Gable. He's a killer. So it was just a wonderful experience to be around people who are just like savages. Good guys. Like most humans are not. And that was a life-changing experience for me, being around just 50 world-class humans, about 20 guys together could take over a small country. And
that's right. Go into Grenada and you're the kings, baby.
Yeah. You live with those guys for 6 years and it changes you as a man.
No doubt. And Alan should have been in the finals 4 years in a row, except for you guys had that 1 year where you kind of were on probation, I believe. Right.
Yeah. 1 year for him, 2.5 for me.
That's
I got
shame.
Jacked around freshman year. I was pulled in and out of the lineup nonstop. Yeah. I remember one time Henson wrestled at Missouri, Sammy Henson. He went on to win the world title. He was up at Gallagher Iba on the mat ready for me. You know, it was a big match. I actually had a 13-year winning streak against Henson, and wow. I wanted to keep going. I was getting, and the NCAA kept calling saying, no, Perler can't wrestle. Now he can. Now he can. Now he can. So yeah. Finally they did. The dual meet, I think, right, 15, 20 minutes, and they finally said, screw it, you know. The attorneys were calling, and my emotions were so jacked up anyway. I'm not sure I could have beaten him that time. But, yeah, I got jacked around my freshman year. I lost all my sophomore year, and I lost all postseason wrestling my junior year.
Jeez.
And then I wrestled my senior year. So, yeah, Allen lost a year. Me and my brother lost 2 years. Chuck Barbie lost 1 year.
Yeah.
I got jacked around pretty hardcore. So my gray shirt year kind of screwed me a lot.
But you did. You did end up. You did end up winning a few conference championships, and you were an All-American, right?
Yeah. So I was my freshman year. I wrestled, and I was NCAA qualifier. Did not place.
Okay.
There's a few All-Americans that did that I beat that year. I was pretty miserable cutting all that weight.
Right.
Now that's just probably I was young.
Yeah.
Not an excuse. It's just I couldn't handle the weight cutting. Sure. And I faded at the end of the year. Just physically was just worn out. And, you know, back then in the 90s, the coaches nowadays are quite a bit more smarter about their training.
Sure.
And back then it was just Army boot camp every day.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. Yep.
That was just the way it was. But yeah, yep. So didn't wrestle my sophomore year, junior year. I wrestled up until the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was NCAA champ that year. He transferred to Nebraska.
Okay.
He was able to transfer. He beat Sean Charles in the NCAA finals.
Wow.
Wow. I lost that year. That was to me.
Okay.
So technically, I was ranked number one in the nation that year. Couldn't wrestle.
And well, then, yeah. I mean, both you and Allen were ranked number one that year in '93, right? I mean, he was undefeated.
So was Pat Smith.
Yeah.
And then, in the senior year, I was ranked number one, and I just kind of blew it. And, you know, there's tight wrestling. It's NCAA tournament, and I ended up being All-American. But, so now I'm just in the wrestling business world. Been doing that for 22 years, but you know, Oklahoma State wrestling is something I think about every day. And like I said earlier, it changed me as a man. It's made me very successful in my life.
That's great. And you know, sometimes we just have to go through, you know, sometimes it's just flat out nonsense when you look back on it, right? That you didn't, you really didn't have to go through it. If people had their head on straight, you know, and had some empathy and had some, you know, just humanity, right? Nobody would have had to gone through that. But you know what? It forged who Nick Perler is today. And now you are presenting those same, you know, excellent lessons to the others that you coach and that you inspire. And that's what Blood Time's all about, Nick. Sometimes we got to go through stuff like that.
Yeah. Some things are out of your hands, you know?
Yeah.
I look at the NCAA, uh-huh. You know, you're 17-year-old kid, or nowadays are committing at 16 years old sometimes.
I know, I know.
And so you're 16 years old, and you're basically saying, I will wrestle for you in a few years, and you do that. And the NCAA punishes 19, 20-year-old kids because you're still a kid.
Yeah.
When a 8-year-old man breaks a few rules, and the athletic director is breaking rules, or you're getting punished because the football program was on probation 6 years ago, and they've got like a 10-year probation.
Yep. Yep.
Your coach breaks some stupid minor rules like paying our hope. We're redshirt freshmen on the wrestling team.
Yep.
We go to tournaments. They're called open tournaments. And they were buying our hotels for us. It's perfectly legal now. It was legal the year after we did it.
Yeah.
Coaches lied about it. So, I am a little bit bitter, but I also think that it's sort of tragic how even back then in the 90s, the NCAA, you have all of these high-powered attorneys who want to punish boys because their coaches and athletic directors and even the football coach, when they were in middle school, broke some rules, and the school, technically athletic department, is still on probation, and they're going to take 2.5 years of my wrestling career.
Yeah.
And it's just complete garbage.
Yep.
And you know, it's just complete garbage, and I think it's unfair.
Sure.
And I think I don't have a lot of respect for the NCAA or what they were about back then. I don't know if it's any better nowadays, but to me, grown men should be punished, not 17 to 20 year old boys.
Yeah.
Complete garbage. And that's how I feel about it.
I hear what you're saying, Nick. And, you know, I have some history with that with my family, is that my cousin was Jerry Tarkanian, God rest his soul. He went through a ton of that at UNLV back in the day in the 70s and 80s. And he and his son, Danny Tarkanian, fought the NCAA tooth and nail for years and finally were vindicated. But it was very disingenuous and very hypocritical on a lot of the things and the way they imposed. And it depended upon who was in favor at that time, you know. So, you know, UCLA could do some things that UNLV could not, because they could do the same thing.
They want to cut the head off of the big snake, right?
Right, right, right.
They're high-powered attorneys, and they want to have a career. It's no different than a warmongering, a military guy.
Sure.
I'm a huge military guy fan, but we know that you cannot be a war hero unless there's a war to fight.
Exactly. Right? Well said.
Yep. High-powered attorney, unless you have brought down some people of higher acclaim than you. So you're a 42-year-old hotshot attorney, and you can bring down a famous 62-year-old coach. You can bring down Oklahoma State wrestling. That's a feather in your cap.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
These young guys in GQ magazine can write articles about how this attorney brought down UNLV basketball or OSU wrestling, but really when you dig down in the weeds, you find out that it was just complete bureaucratic bullshit.
Yep.
And people were making money, and people are trying to build their careers on the backs of boys, which is what these attorneys were trying to do to us. And you know, you see it nowadays. You just turn on the TV set, you see it, right?
Oh, yeah.
People are making money off of it's just really just corruption is what it is.
Yeah, well, it's they make money off of the disaffected or the underserved population, and they utilize that as pawns, and it's really
100%.
Yeah, it's despicable, yeah. And it's all agenda driven with no genuine humanity, you know, really involved. I mean, when you look at some of the crises that are happening over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, particularly right now, some of the things, how can you actually say that our leaders truly have a belief in humanity? They have a belief in agenda and power, and power. You know, it's that simple. And power for what reason? You know, at the end of the day, you know what I mean.
You can't tell me that we can't take get the drugs out of the streets in some of these neighborhoods.
For sure,
it would be very easy to do. You know, there's no drugs in the military. There's no, well, there are probably some, but you get my point. Yeah. So, but basically, you have politicians or attorneys. I'm not bashing attorneys, but Oklahoma State was nothing more than career building by young hotshot attorneys who wanted to bring down a famous wrestling program.
Yes.
And they popped up us kids who, I don't know, the coach says, hey, go wrestle this tournament in Drake University. And I show up and I'm buying my own meals, but they paid the hotel. I don't know what the NCAA rules is. The NCAA rule book is about 30,000 pages thick.
I know.
I can hardly pass algebra, and I'm cutting weight 4 hours a week, and I'm in practice, and I'm trying to navigate being a college freshman or a redshirt freshman. I don't know the rules. I just know that when they say you're in room 212, I went to room 212 and unpacked my bags.
Yeah.
I don't know why I lost 2.5 years of my career over that.
Yeah.
But, I don't think the athletes' best interests are always at heart, just like I don't think that the constituents of politicians are at heart. I think it's all just a big money grab and bureaucracy. And, you know, fortunately, we haven't seen a lot of this in wrestling lately.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's taking place in other sports. And I feel for those athletes out there who are suffering through it because, you know, that was a little bit of it was kind of somewhat devastating for me, probably more now looking back than it was then.
Sure.
Back then you just put the grinds down and just pound through it.
Yes, that's you did. Yep.
That's my iron worker. He was a very awesome dad, but mean and tough. And everything was, you freaking put your head down and you throw a whole lot of punches
right.
all day long. And that's how I lived my whole life.
Sure.
And that's just what I did. But now looking back as a 51-year-old man, I'm like, dude, I was victimized by these people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm bitter and I want to retaliate, but I can't. It's too late. But it's, and then now when you see this on TV and these other aspects of life, and I'm just like, dude, these people don't give a crap about what they say they do. They're just trying to build their own career. And
you're right. I mean, when you have leaders buying 4 or 5 homes, $1 million homes, you know, and serving an underserved population that barely can, you know, put food on the table. We've got some issues with that.
I made $150,000 a year, fortunately, and I couldn't afford four homes worth millions of dollars each. Yeah. I don't know how they're affording this, but there's money somewhere.
Exactly.
But from an NCA standpoint, these guys are building that, you know, we were just pawns for them, and I suffered for it. But you know, I wouldn't have traded it for the world, like I said before, just because of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nick, you know, it's interesting. Go ahead.
If I went to war or somewhere back then, it was just Iowa and Oklahoma State, I would have probably had the similar experience. But back then, it was really Oklahoma State and Iowa were the only two hammers out there.
Right.
And sure, I had to suffer through some of that garbage to no fault of my own necessarily, just for listening to my coaches. But ultimately, like I said before, I was around an environment of people. People talk about peer pressure like it's bad. Dude, I've experienced good peer pressure. My high school team was ranked in the nation. We had 6 in the state finals in high school. I was around some good young men then. My high school coaches were great, great people. I go to Oklahoma State, and I'm around good, strong men who are success chasing savages in the coaches. And John Smith, I got to train with John for the last three years of his career. I was one of his main training partners.
Wow.
Probably main training partner. I traveled the nation doing John Smith camps. I didn't even do Oklahoma State camps in the summer. I just traveled with John, and I got to hang out with that guy and be around him and as a friend, you know, for
sure.
3 years. And then he was my college coach my last couple of years of college wrestling. So ultimately, what I learned from being around that environment for 6 years, it was absolutely career changing. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I just wouldn't, because it's given me an ability to do what I do nowadays. I'm not successful in the wrestling business because I can coach wrestling better than anybody else, even though I think I probably can.
Yeah.
But it's because I can share this vision of, you know, just like
being a hammer. People, yeah. Being a hammer.
Yeah. And it's that I learned at Oklahoma State,
you know, and we interviewed a guy by name of Hesh Sagafi, who,
good friend of-
yeah, he, who credited obviously his, you know, pretty exponential success in the mortgage field with, just literally just getting his butt wiped and learning how to win from a guy like John Smith. So, and in that room of the 50 savages you were talking about, and I want to come back and explore that. Also, I want to explore how you took that, you know, that bitterness and turned it into a positive, and who helped you do that in the next segment. We're going to take a break, Nick. We'll be back in about 2 minutes with Nick Perler from the Perler Wrestling Academy.
Thank you.
So our producer, Maverick Peters' dad, Scott Peters, was a heck of a high school wrestler, and he wrestled every day with the same guy, and they both made the state tournament. That guy was Jack Coslin. He's the owner of ServPro of Beechwood. ServPro of Beechwood is the industry leader in flood and fire cleanup and restoration, and they serve all of Northeast Ohio. But they're also short of staff. They're looking for team members. And if you're willing to work hard and help homeowners and businesses get their lives back in order and work with a former state qualifier, seek out ServPro of Beechwood. They will provide training, support, and of course, benefits. So if you're looking for that good entry-level position, seek Jack Coslin, the owner of ServPro of Beechwood, at serveproofbeechwood.com. Jack Coslin, thank you.
Defense Soap at defensesoap.com. In the midst of our current health crisis, we at Blood Time want to thank Guy and Gus Seiko and the team at Defense Soap as a beacon of our protection. Body wipes, skin cleansers, bars of soap, shower gels, and disinfectant tablets. All this and more as Defense Soap is on the front line of our protection. Thanks to the Seiko family and their team at Defense Soap. Check them out for all your protection needs during these precarious times. Defense Soap at DefenseSoap.com.
Hey, and we're back. This is Coach Cimarroni with Nick Perler, and had some great conversations with him first segment. Nick, you know, obviously there was some real tough stuff that you went through, but also some amazing stuff that you went through with some amazing people. You know, Blood Time is that Blood Time moment. Who was that Blood Time moment person for you, and what did they say or what did they do, and how do they transform you? And now what are you doing with that transformation and taking that, you know, some of those negative things that happened to you into a positive world, and now you're inspiring other people to do so through your academy?
Yeah, well, probably my wife. When I was my second year of school, I gray shirted, and then my red shirt year, I met my wife. She was just fresh on campus, you know, fresh out of high school, probably September, I think.
Okay.
9th or something. I remember the date we met.
Wow.
And that was 30 something years ago. Right.
Right.
So, you know, Jackie and I dated all throughout college and then ended up getting married right after my senior year of college. And then, you know, I was kind of lost in life. Back in the day, it was weird because I see these little Taekwondo gyms. I thought I could do that for wrestling one day.
Right.
And really, for me, it wasn't like from a business. Let's be honest. I have a business. I make money. Okay.
Yeah.
But I also coach, and I'm like, everything I've done is built around one thing. Number one, from an academy standpoint or training weekly practice standpoint, what could I have had? Because when I get to college, right, Robbie Haddon was on campus. He and Pat were good friends. Robbie was, he might have been an All-American as a redshirt freshman. I believe he was.
Okay.
Then he ended up leaving. There was some personal issues there. You know, it's tough when you're a young guy.
Sure.
His coach, Zespan, NCAA champ or All-American for Iowa State. That was his middle school coach.
Wow.
His freaking middle school coach in high school. Now, I had great coaches. My coach was listening to this. I'm not knocking them a bit. Pat Smith had Leroy Smith, second in the world NCAA champ. That was his coach when he was a little kid.
Right.
His brother. Then right. He had John Smith, all right? And then, like, Jacob Newby and all these guys who were coming through our program, they all had very extremely experienced wrestling coaches, and I had good coaches, and they're also in Oklahoma, and they're from California, and from all these really high-powered wrestling states.
Yes.
And, you know, I had great coaches, but we didn't wrestle in the – there was off-season wrestling around St. Louis because my mom and my dad and some friends of ours started Team St. Louis. They got
okay.
Pepsi just sponsored us. We hired Mizzou wrestlers to drive 3 hours and 20 minutes round trip twice a week to train us. So, I mean, I sold my four-wheeler when I was 12, and I got a home wrestling mat. What other kids do that?
I love did. That. Your big wheel. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Three-wheeler back then. And then we had technique in a book that we learned. It was a light blue wrestling technique book. I still have it. It's in my mom's house. So we literally, when I get to college wrestling, I was like so lost. I remember we used to do evening practices with Jim Shields, one of the greatest coaches in America that no one knows about. Chuck Barbie would attest to that. He was another guy on the team. He runs the NCAA rules committees. He was an All-American. But so we used to have practices, and we were doing open practices, and Ben Cross called me a greenhorn, and I was so freaking pissed off at that guy.
I love
because
it.
Because I was like, because I really didn't know how to score from a high crotch. I just got a leg and tried to get two, you know?
Yeah.
And then Jim Shields, who was at Mizzou as a coach at one point in time, he was All-American at Oklahoma State. Then he's back at Oklahoma State as the assistant. He gets me and my brother and about four to six other guys, and we're doing 8:30 to 10 o'clock practices at night. And I'm talking almost every night for months.
Love it.
And he, and said, don't tell the coaches. They're not going to be happy that I'm working with you guys on the side. Yeah. He's like, but you guys need help. So here I am thinking, I don't know what the hell I'm freaking doing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we won junior nationals in Greco a couple of times and placed in freestyle. We didn't really have a very good leg attack until we learned the John Smith low single leg. Craig Martin, a good friend of mine still, he was All-American at Mizzou. He showed me John Smith's low single leg when I was a junior in high school. Me and my brother mastered it. We had two chairs on our wrestling mat with a broomstick over it. We were practice shooting low at night.
Absolutely. I love that drill.
Yeah, I used to throw tennis balls in my wrestling room downstairs in my basement and try to catch it with my low single leg hand. And we were just psychotic about wrestling. So I think when I started my academy, I was like, you know, I saw this opportunity because I saw these Taekwondo gyms, and I thought I could do that from like as a job or a career. But mostly the driving force, getting back what I said earlier, I apologize, I'm a little bit long-winded.
No, it's okay. I'll keep you corralled. Don't worry. That's what a good coach does. I keep you corralled. Yeah. On point, my man.
It's always been what could I have used when I was coming up?
Okay.
From a camp system. I was not happy with the way camps were ever ran when I was working them. And I was like, what camp would I send my son to?
Right.
That's my criteria. What could I have used growing up from a training standpoint?
Okay.
There you go. Pearly Wrestling Academy. What kind of camp would I send my son to? There you have it. It's Pearly Wrestling Summer Camps. That's the driving force in everything, is customer driven and what will make a wrestler really good, really fast. Because I think the be patient, trust the process, I think that's kind of bullshit.
Okay.
I'm like, man, if you want to wrestle in college, you better have a famous coach texting you by the time you're 17 years old. We don't have until we're 39 years old. We got to go, people.
Right. Right.
And so I am extremely results oriented, and that's just the way it is. And I think that's what I learned at Oklahoma State too. And that's just how I live my life. And that's mm-hmm. how we structure our business. But you know, the blood time moment for me, the person was obviously my wife, because she was always like, you can do that. You can do that. You sure. can do that. And I kind of bounced around not knowing what I'm going to do in my life, because all I ever did was chase wrestling goals. And when I was done, got married, and I had a degree in exercise science, and then I got to grad school at Mizzou. I just didn't want to do that. And I got a job working at a machine shop, which I actually loved. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, maybe I'll be a teacher. So I moved back to Oklahoma to get my teaching credentials. Ended up getting a job in Texas on an emergency permit.
Okay.
She was down there. I was miserable in Texas. I didn't like the city. I didn't like the bull crap of teaching and coaching. Teaching is a small part of what these teachers do.
Yeah.
And I lived it. Yeah. That was 25 years ago, but it was just a bull crap profession for me, because I don't think it was kids oriented. I think it was I just didn't like it. And then she was like, let's move to Missouri, start your wrestling business. You've talked about doing it. You can do this. And that went on for about a year and a half. And right away. It took off right away. But obviously, we starved for about 2.5 years. We both quit our jobs, moved to Missouri with nothing.
Right.
We had two kids that time. She's making $8 an hour. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing odd jobs, working for my dad, working for a chiropractor. I got some teaching job at a little private school, making $15,000 a year. I was working three jobs and starting my business, and I was grinding hard. But there was times where I was like, maybe I can do this on the side, and maybe I can maybe get into financial planning, which I was always into, to the coaching aspect of that, and how there's a opportunity to build something for yourself.
Sure.
You know, and she's like, no, you're in the wrestling business, make it work. And that was kind of a career changing moment for me. Because it was like, it is working, Nick. You are quit your teaching job. We are paying the bills.
So there was no. So at that point, Jackie goes to you. There's no plan B. This is plan A, plan and plan Z. I love that.
Because when you're a man, you know.
Yeah.
And when my dad was just he was a iron worker, union guy.
Sure.
He always encouraged us to start our own business. He's like, you guys cannot get along good with other people. He's like, you need to work for yourself.
I love it.
I will tell you when I started my own business, he and my family, they had two interventions with me trying to convince me not to do this.
Sure.
Trying to convinced me to do that because I wasn't raking it in, and I wasn't killing it, I wasn't crushing it. He was nervous about my future, just like any family where he's like, you got to be a man and support your family. You can't chase this pipe dream anymore. You know, and there was two like interventions there, and I was like, hey, F you guys, I'm going to make it work.
I love that. I love that.
It worked. But my dad wasn't trying to talk me out of it. He was just scared.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, it's a generational thing, Nick. I mean, you know, think about it too. You're an iron worker. You're not an entrepreneur. So, you got to respect that. And the man obviously put his head down and put food on your table and a roof over your back, you know, and a roof over your house and food on your, you know, and clothes on your back. So having said all that, you got a great support system in Jackie. And, you know, let me distill this down for you, Nick. Tell me what the Perler system is all about and what do you want to impart to the wrestling and to the world at large? What is your message?
Yeah, well, so what we tell, we focus on four key areas. One is your mental game, right? And not just mental toughness and working hard. Everyone does that. You know, the whole concept of just work harder and be tougher and things will happen for you. I think that's 100% spot on for a time being. Wrestling's 90% mental. Sure it is. In the beginning, then what if you're a Division I starter in college wrestling? Everybody's doing that.
Right.
Now what? And right. I'm focusing on what separates the one percenters from each other.
Sure.
And I think the whole coaching mantras is all engineered towards getting the bottom 10 to 30% athlete or wrestler into the state medals. Mm-hmm. And this coach speak to me is completely moronic. I think it's overblown. I think you should teach and coach to the upper third of the group, and everybody else better tread water until they can swim, and then they need to get on shore, then they need to take on fronting, and they need to be a part of the deal, you know? So our approach from the mental game standpoint is all how to maybe, this is something I struggled with as an athlete. You know, just dealing with anxieties of wrestling, learning how to protect your bloodstream as far as not allowing these stress hormones to enter in your blood system.
Sure.
And how to have good thoughts, how to be a happy warrior, how to have, you know, blissful dissatisfaction is what Ed Milet calls it. That's a wonderful way of putting it.
Okay. I like that. Blissful dissatisfaction. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
How you cannot figure out the match beforehand, how you have to sort of, you know, you have a game plan, but really, you know, it's like a quarterback. When they snap the football, you got to figure some things out on the fly.
Yeah.
And so that's number one. The number two would be the positioning side of wrestling. We call them the four pillars. Okay. You know, I would rather win 1-0 than 13-12. And people bash me on social media for making that statement, but they just don't know what the hell they're talking about because it's a fact. And they go, well, isn't it better to win 13-0? I'm like, well, duh.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You think Kyle Dake's going to beat Jordan Burroughs 13-0? No. So it is better. I would rather get 5 takedowns in practice today and give up 0 than get 20 takedowns in practice and give up 15.
Right.
So positioning is important. Yeah. So the mind game, positioning, and then hand fighting and moving your feet, right?
Sure. Footwork. Oh, my goodness. Footwork and hands are your first and first offense and first defense. 100%.
Yes. That's a part of, that's one of our pillars, and our last pillar is technique. And from a technique standpoint, everything is prioritized in a hierarchy. So we mostly focus on the common positions. For example, in high school wrestling, your opponent's going to grab your neck about 8-9 times a match. I've counted. So 8 times a match times 50 matches is 400 times a year someone's going to grab your neck with a collar tie.
Yep.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yep.
Hey, dude, we've got a common position here.
Yeah.
Right? So we have 5 ways to score from there.
Yep.
You know, if I'm not to shoot 2 free throws a season, I wouldn't waste my precious practice time working free throws.
Yep.
But a lot of free throws. So any team that's worth their salt is a tremendous free throw team. So we look at wrestling and the common positions that we're in, and we focus on the best one to three ways to score from there. But in our elite academy, we focus on the best three to five. And then on our super advanced program, which is called the World Class Wrestler Program, I mean, we go deeper into the common positions because now we're going counters to counters, right?
Sure.
I have a front headlock. That's a common position. What's the best two ways to counter out? Well, what if your opponent counters out? Now that's another common position. It's not common. It's not common except for that last 5-10% of a wrestler in America who actually knows a couple of counters to get out of a front headlock. So now there are positions that are not common to every wrestling match, but they're damn common when you start looking at the top 10, 20 ranked guys in America.
Sure.
So from a technique standpoint, that's our philosophy. So mental game, positioning, we want to have the best stance in America and be impossible to score on and still be aggressive. We want to be able to move our feet like an ice skater skating on ice.
Yes.
We want to have hand fighting tactics so that we can wrestle to the leg.
Yep.
Right?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Pat Milkovich talked about how he wanted to be an ice skater. That's all he wanted to do.
There you go.
And here's Pat Milkovich, a four-time NCAA finalist, two-time champion. And boy, oh boy, footwork is incredibly important. Incredibly 100%. Important.
Yep, because you have to get to your stuff, right?
And
that's the hard part about wrestling is people don't even understand.
Yeah.
And you see frustrated parents. And a big part of what I do, the reason we have, you know, last year we had over 400 academy students, 417. And then COVID hit, and then we dropped a little bit. But we're over 350, 360 now. Why do we have 360 families training with us every week? Because I'm training the parents, too.
Sure. Big time. Big time. Yep. Beautiful stuff. That is beautiful stuff, Nick. It's incredibly important because it's an entire family that needs to help this effort to be an excellent wrestler, be an excellent human being. You need great parenting.
We need to be on the same page. And if they don't believe what I'm doing, then they should quit. People say, do you have I go, no. They go, I don't even want you to be loyal. You be loyal to the results. If you're not getting results, leave.
Yes.
You know? But I do know this, though, and Oklahoma State taught us this. They said, we can make you a great wrestler, but if you want to be the best, you have to do that on your own.
Sure.
So we call that micro training. So macro training is what we can do in a room with our coaches and our guys, right? And then you progress your way up through our levels of academy or our camps. We have 56-day camps. We have 28-day camps. We also have 5-day camps. You choose what you think you're interested in. And every camp has a different sort of practice plan that's built, kind of like mathematics is built, right?
Yep.
You're not going to do you until you can do long division. But in wrestling coaching, we do that. We bounce around a lot of times. But I think that, you know, I try to educate the parents in the fact that just because you can drill a technique doesn't mean you can hit it against an opponent. And then once you can hit it against an opponent, that doesn't mean you can hit it against a state medalist or a state champ or a national champ. And then you say, well, yes, I did. I won high school nationals. Well, now I'm in college getting my head beaten in the Iowa State practice room. Guess what, dude? You're starting over.
Yes,
So how do you actually use these techniques that you know? A lot of it does come down to hand fighting and footwork, a big part of it. And a lot of it's just sheer instinctive as well. But from a positioning standpoint, if you're on my leg 17 times a practice, how am I ever supposed to get to my near on far leg? Dude, you can't because you don't have time because people are on your legs all practice. So positioning really pretty much trumps technique in my estimation.
Yes. And positioning is incredibly, incredibly important. Getting the angle, I call it economy of motion, Nick. I want to be in the best position with the least amount of work.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so what I'm also hearing from you too is two things that I love. One is positive self-talk and self-coaching. The greatest compliment you can give a parent is the ability to be a self-parent, doing the right thing, putting yourself in the right position with no one looking. Same thing with coaching as an athlete, being a self-coach. And the other thing that I'm hearing from you is being unconsciously competent. Knowing what to do without even thinking about it. Those two things, I think, are resonating hugely from what you're positioning and what you're teaching at the academy.
that you cannot do that when you have these thoughts. So in wrestling, you need to be instinctive. It's called entering the flow state. You cannot do that. Some kids wrestle, most of us, myself included as a wrestler probably, wrestle better in practice than we do matches.
Sure.
Why? Well, because in matches, there's some pressure. We really want to win. There's a lot on the line. Yeah. So we try to, we want this scary feeling to go away. So we try to pre-plan how to win the match. And now we're becoming very conscious. There's a great book, Game of Tennis, and it talks about being subconscious and not conscious.
Yes.
You can't be conscious out there on the tennis court. You have to be, your subconscious has to take over.
Yeah, the zone, being in the zone, being in the zone. Absolutely, being in the zone.
Yeah, the more you try to gain control over the match, because you're nervous and scared about the outcome and you want to win so bad, or your coaches or your parents want you to win so bad that they sit you down and they start mapping out exactly how to win the match, they're causing you to become very conscious.
Right.
And so, yeah, as far as operating instinctively, or however it was that you phrased it,
I said unconsciously competent. You just know what to do without even thinking about it. You just know what to do without thinking about it.
Yeah, unless your mental game is on, unless you know how to navigate the emotions of wrestling.
Sure.
And we have a phrase, whatever happens, happens.
Yep. Well said.
That's part of our four pillars of our mind game, right?
Yep.
So I try to educate the parents and kids as well, not to try to make this scary feeling go away just by pre-planning how the match is going to go. So we have a thing we do in practice sometimes. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask you guys what's going to happen in the match this weekend. And I want all of you to say, I don't have a clue. And they do that like three times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Don't even worry about it. Now, sure, you might have a rough, loose game plan. If I'm wrestling an opponent that I know, I might say, I think he's going to back up to the edge and try to score. I think he's going to ride left-handed on top. I think he's going to, because they did that last time, I think my underhook will work again because I wrestled him at freestyle camp last summer and I underhooked the crap out of him and won. I'm gonna keep these things in mind, but ultimately I'm just going to hold position, score every chance I get, and whatever happens, happens. And that's pretty much our you know, three of the core sort of talking points about our mental game, because we're giving up control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready for anything. Just like a quarterback, when you snap me the ball, I have a play I'm trying to run, but holy shit, it doesn't work 98% of the time. The quarterback has to figure it out on the fly.
Sure, that's why you have three or four or five different progressions, no question about it. Absolutely. And that's what good coaching is all about too, being able to help and see and in a symbiotic relationship coach the athlete. And I think that's really a beautiful thing. That's where the chair comes in play, and that's where most people kind of fall down as a coach.
They overdo it.
Yeah, they overdo it. So I think that's beautiful, and I love that. And Nick, I could talk to you forever about this stuff. It's fantastic, and I want to. I want to have you back at a different time, but we're getting close to our time frame, if you will. And you've been dropping a lot of pearls, man, a lot of pearls. And I love it. Perler. I love that. So what I want to do is, though, at what we're doing now during this time of the COVID, obviously, is closing with some words of encouragement and courage from our guests. So I'm going to turn it over to you for your last word of courage and encouragement that you can leave with our audience.
So as far as encouraging athletes you're talking about?
Sure. Just during this time. During this time.
Yeah. Oh, and as far as COVID or just as a career path and a goal chaser?
You know what? Give it. However you want to present it. However you want to present it.
Yeah. I would say organize a plan.
Okay.
And if you're a kid who is 12 or 9, or you're a high school sophomore and you've only wrestled 3 years, that could be difficult. The coaches and parents listening to this, we have to train according to some kind of a plan. For crying out loud, this has been, hey, and I'm going to sound very arrogant, and I do not mean to do that. If people say, man, Nick, how do you, I mean, we're adding on to our gym. I'll have 25,000 square foot here in St. Louis. I have an 8,000 square foot gym in Central Missouri, bought a Dollar General.
Sure.
And why is my camps full? Why are people driving 7 hours round trip for a 2 hour practice? And they are, and there's quite a few of them, probably 20. Mm-hmm. Why is this happening? How do you coach wrestling as a job and you haven't had a quote real job for 21 years? And I say this, there's not a lot of competition out there.
Okay.
These coaches, and I was a joke. I'm a self-proclaimed joke as a high school coach my first year.
Okay.
And I wanted to be good at it.
Right.
And I look here and I go, you suck. You better start winning. And I started getting very organized. And when I got organized, yep. How come this gym expansion I'm doing has a blueprint? Because sure. You have to have a blueprint. And I model a lot of my wrestling training around what they do in gymnastics. In gymnastics, my niece actually just won the all-around level 10 gymnastics state title, so she's the best gymnast in the state of Missouri right now.
Fantastic.
But they have levels, right? How come karate has levels? How come wrestling, some of you watching this or listening, you're going to send your 9-year, 10-year-old or your 16-year-old first-year wrestler to a camp, and some coach or high school coach or college kid is going to show them 12 ways to throw someone from a Russian 2-on-1.
Yeah.
And you're going to be getting ripped off.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, is there no plan here? So yeah. if you want encouragement from me,
yes,
let's avoid discouragement. Why are you discouraged? Because you've been bought into the big lies. You're only as good as your workout partners. No, you're only as good as your single leg, dude. I'm putting in mat time. Hey, just because you're hot, tired, and sweaty after practice doesn't mean you got good today.
Right.
You practiced 13 ways to throw someone out of a Russian 2-on-1. You wasted your time today, right? There's something called opportunity cost. You're stealing this opportunity to learn these. How come every college wrestling match looks the same? That is by design. That's not by accident, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you can avoid discouragement by saying, here's my weightlifting plan in season.
Yep.
Here's my weight. Plan off season. Here's my lifting plan in season. Here's my wrestling plan. Here's my drill plan. Have you ever, my brother and I did, have you ever taken a piece of paper and wrote front headlock on it, and then ear to ear collar tie, and then underhook, and then cross wrist, and then rear standing position? Have you wrote all of the common positions down, and then under front headlock, wrote everything that you know? And then under ear-to-ear collar tie, well, everything offensively and you know. Then you wrote cross wrist, all of the tilts you know. No, you probably have not. So you need to get very organized. And I think if kids and coaches and parents would just train, organize, and according to a system. And I'm going to plug my online wrestling academy right now.
Sure.
Listen to Colton Schultz. He's won world titles in high school. His dad bought my training program and pulled this kid out of school and did homeschooling. And he and his brother Trenton just drilled. Nick Lee of Penn State grew up using my system. You can go to my website right now. Stefan Mishik's dad gave me a testimony that'll blow your freaking mind.
Sure.
You know? So I have a plan if you want it. It's on our website, but if you want to make up your own, we have to have some kind of a plan. How come the gymnastics coaches have a plan and we have wrestling coaches who are just randomly pulling moves off of YouTube?
Yeah.
And it's like, you guys are just, there's nothing. I'm surprised that American wrestling is as good as it is, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And these coaches are good dudes. They haven't snapped out of it yet. And I will tell you, I sucked as a coach in high school my first year. By the time my third year, I was one of the best coaches in America. That sounds arrogant, but that is a fact, because
sure.
I attacked it. And I think that once we get organized and systematic, now, you know, some people are discouraged, and I'm like, I would be too.
Yeah.
I have kids coming to my camp right now. They've wrestled 7 years. They're right-handed, but they have a left-handed wrestling stance. I go, you can't wrestle with your left foot forward and shoot right-handed. Well, coach, I've always done that. And I'm just like, man, how come nobody noticed that? The poor kid, you know? And if you put 7 years of experience in and you still can't place and state, I don't blame you for quitting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Well, it's interesting, Nick, what you're saying, because every wrestler that I've ever coached that's listened to me has either placed or won the state tournament.
Yeah.
Those that don't, those that don't are have a very frustrating career. And I said, hey, it's up to you. You want to listen? Great. If you don't want to listen, that's fine too. God bless America.
Yeah. You know, yeah, it's a great country. And all you got to do is you have to point to all the other kids who did, right?
Yes. I said, here's the guy. Here's the guy that's just, and we just did it. We had a kid that went 25-2 this year. Okay, made the state tournament or was an alternate to the state tournament. And the reason he did that was he put in the work. And nobody else did. Nobody else did, you know, and so, and that just happens. It's that simple.
Mindset of it's just who's the most fatigued at the end of the day. Yeah. You know, my brother told the dad was like, oh, he was complaining about something. And my brother was like, hey, dude, if you just want me to throw a hot, tired, and sweaty kid in your truck after practice, I can do that.
All day long.
It's like three different ways in an hour and a half. That's going to take a little bit of work, you know?
Yep.
And a lot of it comes down to, from a coaching standpoint, when you get organized, you're going to avoid discouragement from your coaches and your coaching staff. People are going to win, and then word of mouth takes over, and then kids in the hallway, and then there's newspaper articles and internet articles, and then you go to recruit at the middle school and youth, and like, we want to wrestle there. And then, I mean, it just takes time, but if you can get organized and get a system approach,
you can get good very, very quick. And I've learned that and lived it. So I hear what you're saying 100%. And I appreciate that. And Nick, you've been great. I could talk to you for hours, but we can't. So we gotta wrap this up. And I want to thank you so much for the pearls that you've really dropped in this episode.
All right. Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And what you're doing out there is fantastic. So Nick Perler, give one more last plug of your place and your website.
Yeah, you go to perlerwrestling.com. We pretty much do it all, camps, clinics, academy, you name it. We sell out most years. We sold out before April this year. But we do have girls camps still in session. We have an online training program that those guys I mentioned utilized as growing up. So you just Google Perler Wrestling. And if you don't want to come to our camps, fine. I would encourage you to look at our Facebook and YouTube and just type Perler Wrestling. Some of our wrestling videos there have a couple hundred thousand views. That's free. I don't want a dime for it. I don't try to charge for that stuff. I don't charge for about 95% of what I do. Sure. I throw tons of information out there, but it's not always wrestling moves. So if you would just go to Instagram, social media, Facebook, and you just go to you type Perler Wrestling and you search and you go to videos, you go to YouTube, there's 970 videos there. Everything is there. You just have to dig. I have shared everything that I've learned in video, and I spent hundreds of hours doing it. Sure. And I love it because I'm a coach at heart. So if you can't come out here for any reason, that's fine. That's fine. You should study everything that we have because I can help you if you just quit trying to have 47 mentors. Pick a few people who are actually winning, and you go really, 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 really deep, and you live there.
Yep.
I mean, boom. So just check us out on social media or on YouTube also, because there's so much information. I can change your whole wrestling career if you just sit and listen. You don't even have to come out here. It's all out there. So
well, listen. Absolutely. Well, listen to us on Blood Time too, my friend, because we're changing lives as well, one episode at a time. And Nick Perler, you have been phenomenal. We really appreciate your philosophy. It is rare, and it's full of excellence. And we love that. And we love that you were raised by savages and are currently raising savages. It's great stuff. Well, keep doing what you're doing in the show me state of Missouri, my man.
Yep, thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.
All right, God bless. This is Coach Cimarroni for Blood Time. We are all blood. Love to all. This is Coach Cimarroni. I trust you are well and about to emerge after this most challenging of years. In all that we have collectively been through, we can still find that silver lining. That said, it is my pleasure and honor to announce a rekindling and reconnection to my longtime and good friends at the Montrose Auto Group. Mike Thompson, Chris Mills, and the incredible staff at Montrose Westside have afforded me and Razor, my company, an opportunity to present the outstanding lineup of high-quality vehicles in their stable. Jaguars, Range Rovers, Volvos, and a bevy of high-quality pre-owned vehicles are at our and your disposal. I look forward to being of service to you and your family, friends, company, and associates at your request and direction. Let's get together soon to discover how we may be a solution to your driving requirements and desires. Thanks so much and talk soon. This is Coach Cimarroni for the Montrose Auto Group's West Side Store.
Ready to up your game and learn more about the thrilling world of sports betting? Introducing Double Down with Breslow, the ultimate podcast about the business of sports gambling. Join me, James Breslow, and a long list of expert guests as we dive into the art and science of the sports betting industry, evolving regulations, technology enhancements, and the meteoric rise in the number of players makes this sector the fastest growing and most intriguing in the world. Unlock the business secrets from many of the industry's most recognizable C-suite executives, including famous odds makers and influencers. Every episode of Double Down with Breslow is packed with insider tips, deeply skilled analysis, and in-depth discussions. Don't miss out on the ultimate resource for mastering the business of sports betting. Listen to Double Down with Breslow on the Evergreen Podcast Network or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's Double Down with Breslow, the business of sports betting podcast.